Good afternoon. I'd like to call the meeting, the April 27th, 2016 Carson City Planning Commission meeting to order. Madam Secretary, would you call the roll, please?
Chairperson Esswein.
Here.
Vice Chair Sattler. Commissioner Castro. Commissioner Green. Commissioner Monroy.
Here.
Commissioner Owens.
Here.
Commissioner Salerno.
Here.
A quorum's present.
Thank you. Mr. Owen, would you lead us in the pledge, please?
Please rise for the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. At this time, the public is invited to comment on or discuss any item that is relevant to or within the authority of the Planning Commission, including any matter that is not specifically included on the agenda as an action item. Is anyone here to address the Planning Commission on an item that's not on the agenda? Please step forward and state your name.
Good evening. My name is John Bullis. I live on Chaparral Drive. I'm here to express my surprise and concern and disappointment in the city and in the engineers for considering a PUD on the property west of Mountain Street in that open field that is owned by the Andersons. It's not consistent with the area to consider such high density and low size, small size lots. I'm concerned about the increase in traffic. And if you've lived in that area a long time, as I have, you've seen that area, that open field, flood on occasions. There's a high water table and a severe water problem. I would ask that you do not approve the PUD, and I would not approve the reduced lot sizes in that area of the ranch land that's being looked at. I think the outfit's called Vintage something or other. But I thank you for your service, and I appreciate your time to allow me to express my surprise and concern and disappointment to even put a PUD in that area.
Thank you, Mr. Bullis. Next.
Yes, my name is Tommy Hughes. I've lived in Carson City since 1975. I noticed an article in the paper this morning. Mr. Bennett, I think he's with Loomis, said that if we build it, the city will provide water. In addition to what Mr. Bullis said, I agree with Mr. Bullis. High density building in that area, and especially high density building with HUD housing, financing rather, the people surrounding the Anderson Ranch, I'm sure, didn't have HUD housing, didn't finance through HUD. They went conventional financing. And if you have HUD financing, what does that say about the people who are going to be moving in there? The other objection I have is that when I asked this question at the meeting at Fritch School, what is the water and sewer hookup rate right now? I knew the answer to that because I had spoken to the Board of Supervisors. It's $500 for water and $500 for sewer. Back in 1990, it was $5,000 for each. And considering the fact that we need money to bring our sewage treatment plant up to date, I think it would behoove you commissioners to recommend to the Board of Supervisors, if they are going to approve this thing, to raise it to $5,000. I don't want it raised to $5,000 5 years from now, when all of Carson is built out to the 80 or 85 or 90,000 that I've heard mentioned. I want it right now. And that money can go toward, because the builders are just going to pass it on to the home buyers. So I want, and if the Board of Supervisors could make a change like that from 5,000 water hookup, 5,000 sewer hookup to 500, they can certainly change it back again. So, and my final thing is, and I asked our mayor and our city manager, I said, how much water do we have? You know, this is we've gone through 4 years of drought. We're still well under an inch below annual average precipitation. So we're not even close to getting out of the drought. So where are we going to get the water? So you've got the building there, you've got building off of Little Lane, you've got 2,500 homes on the Lampa Ranch, you've got, 450, the Schultz Ranch. So where are we going to get the water? And I know we're getting water right now piped in from Douglas County, but I mean, how much water do they have? And what are they going to charge for it as the demand increases? So those are my concerns. And I would hope that if this commission does recommend building on the Anderson property, I would hope that they would be large lots commensurate with the surrounding area. So that's all. Thank you for listening to me.
Mr. Hughes, the recording series asks you to sign in. If you could, please, the recording
series. Sign your name on the sheet there,
oh,
please.
Secretary, sure. Just, is there a pen?
And,
is there a pen there?
Yes, yes. I put a pen there.
Thank you.
I got it.
Just so that the audience knows, if they have questions about the water situation, on next month's Planning Commission agenda, we will be discussing the growth management policy for the city for the next year, which will include a discussion of the availability of water and the number of permits that we are going to be recommending for the next 2 to 4 years. For building permits, so that might be a discussion that you, if you're interested in the water situation, that you attend that meeting.
And when is that going to be?
It's May 19th.
Okay, thank you.
Right, the 19th.
July 19th. It's the last Wednesday in May, which is. May 25th.
May 25th. Next meeting here.
Okay.
And I'll take this opportunity with the mic open to note that this is public comment for
yes.
items not on the agenda, so the Planning Commission can't discuss this. And in fact, the project that they're talking about has not even submitted an application for Planning Commission review yet, and it'll be brought forward as whenever the application submitted, which we don't have yet.
Sure.
My name's Brian Ferenz. My wife and I and our family moved here about 14 years ago. And the topic I wanted to cover is also the proposed vintage property. In the 14 years we've been here, we've seen some wonderful development in Carson City, establishment of the hospital. We've seen apartments go up. We've seen elderly housing go up. We've seen widening of the roads, what's happened out off of William Street with the additional sidewalks, the entire length heading out east, and a lot of wonderful development that really seems to balance the areas of the community, the overall health of the community in terms of different housing, different locations, commercial, retail, manufacturing. And it seems to all really work well with the whole community. When we attended the meeting on the Vintage property, we were also left feeling that it really breaks down that overall feeling, not just for the west side where that facility would be, but for Carson City as a whole. You know, we need the diversity. We need the different areas of town between commercial, retail, rental, elderly care, the hospitals, things of that nature. And that particular area has been developed over time. You know, you watch the blocks from the early 1900s to the 30s to the 40s to the 50s as those houses are built up as you go from center of town out west. And you see the culture, you see the community in everything that's built around there. And you look at some of the newer developments and the newer additions with the trails between the college coming back through those communities. Some of the other communities have been developed, you know, in the latter years, probably in the 90s, 80s, and 90s, where there is wide open space, not just total acreage with a high density and a lot of open acreage, but where those things are really weaved into the homes, into the streets, into how things connect. And when I look at this proposal, it breaks all that down. The old to the new that you see as you progress from downtown out to the west, that addition of trails and open space, it really looks like it breaks it down. And to change the zoning so drastically, whether it's adding commercial to that property or the idea of high density, but we're going to leave some of the ranch open to compensate for that high density, it doesn't work. It's too broken. So I'm here to kind of, you know, it's not an official plan yet, but also express the concerns, not just for that west side, but the whole community. And as you guys look at that, and you look at the proposals, that you balance all of that, as well as the financial, as well as, you know, the utilities and other things that need to be put in place. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, would you sign in, please? Let the record show that Mr. Sattler and Ms. Green have arrived. Okay. Item, is there any more, anyone here to address anything that's not on the agenda? Okay.
Can we answer?
No. And just for the, so that you know, if an item is not on the agenda, we cannot address your issue. We can listen, but we cannot take any action on it.
Understand. Thank you.
Okay.
My name is Leanne Sarum, and I actually was born and raised in Carson, so I've been here my whole life. But just quickly, I just want to also voice my concern for this proposed development or PUD. And I just basically want to say also it's not in it's inconsistent with, I think, what is around the entire area and what the community is wanting or looking for that area to be developed into. And I just want to ask that the city planners really listen and work with the community and the residents around the area, and also that you commissioners really embrace the residents and the people around that area to really listen to what I think we can come to a really nice plan and agreement to that really helps everyone. But I think we just need to really work together. So that's what I ask, but I just want to say I'm opposed to the preliminary plans that are actually being proposed. So thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Anyone else? I saw another hand down here.
Sorry, it takes a minute to fill it out. Good evening. My name is Jan Sullivan. I've been a resident of Carson City since 1952. There were three paved streets at that time, so I've seen lots of change. I live on Newman Place, which backs onto the Ira Anderson Ranch. And in 1997, there was a flood that came down Newman Place and into the field where the proposed vintage is planned. In 2007, we had another flood. Both of those supposedly were the 100-year floods. So I think it's real imperative that we look at this community. We have a small entity in Eagle Valley. We need to look at the entirety. We need to think about the water. We need to think about the flood situation. In the paper today, they said they would raise the elevation by a foot or a foot and a half. What does that do to the existing residences in that area? I don't think the density is appropriate to put 2,500 vehicles onto Mountain Street or Ormsby Boulevard, because those were the seemingly two egresses that were proposed in this. I know it hasn't come before you, but I've been to two meetings now, the first with 300 people, two nights ago with 150 people, and I just ask that you listen to your constituents, that you take into consideration what is best for the community of Carson City, and that we can work together and come to a resolution in terms of how this property is developed. Thank you.
Anyone else for public comment? Okay, seeing none, we'll move on to item C, which is approval of the minutes for the March 30th, 2016 Planning Commission meeting. Has everyone had an opportunity to read the minutes? Anyone have any corrections or changes? Entertain a motion for approval.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor of approval of the minutes signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Item D, modification of the agenda. Items on the agenda may be taken out of order. The public body may combine two or more agenda items for consideration, and the public body may remove an item from the agenda or delay discussion relating to an item on the agenda at any time. Any changes?
We don't have any recommended changes. Just for that note, we would request that you open items F3A and F3B at the same time for discussion. They're related to one project. And then same thing with F4A and B. We'll take discussion of those together.
Okay. We will do that. Okay. Any commissioners have any changes? Okay. Item E, disclosures. Any member of the commission may wish to explain any contact with an applicant or the public regarding an item on the agenda or business of the commission. Are there any disclosures? Seeing none, we'll move on to item F, which is public hearing matters. First item on the public hearing agenda is item F1, SUP-16-018, for possible action. To consider a request from the Carson City School District, property owner Carson City School District, Fremont School, for a special use permit to allow a single-phase LED changeable message center display sign on property zone public located at 1511 Firebox Road, APN 010-041-30. Staff?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I'd like to introduce Mark Johnson, the project manager, and Mark Kornick, who's the director of operations for the school system. Hope Sullivan, planning manager. The site is located on the east side of South Solomon Road. The reason this is before the commission today is because it's in the public zoning district. According to the development standards in the public zoning district, signs have to have development standards that are determined based on the requirements and conditions of a special use permit. The applicant is proposing an 8-foot by 4-foot electronic message sign. It will be on the building wall facing South Solomon, or facing east, and it's 198 feet east of the property line. On the aerial we're showing you right now, you'll see where on the building the sign is proposed to be located. On the next graphic, it shows you where on the facade of the building the sign will be located. We've included a photograph taken from the sign location to the properties across the street on South Salomon, and you can see the mobile homes in the distance from the signs. In considering the special use permit, we do have to make 7 findings of fact, and the staff have gone through those findings, and we were able to make those findings in the affirmative, subject to a number of conditions. In large part, those conditions are conditions consistent with the International Sign Association recommendations for electronic signs. Those recommendations or those conditions address things like the hours of sign operation, sign brightness and dimming at night, the message hold times, the message transitions, video and animation. The sign will not have any sound. So the idea of these recommended conditions are almost good neighbor practices to try to limit any negative impact on the neighborhood, particularly the residents across the street, while allowing the school to be able to communicate with the parents, the children, about various events and activities. So with that, I'm happy to answer questions, but the staff is recommending approval of the special use permit because we can make the findings, and we are recommending it subject to conditions.
Thank you. Mr. Sattler.
These requirements, do they follow the ones we approved last year and earlier this year at different schools, et cetera, around the area?
Yes, these conditions are consistent with what the city's been utilizing on electronic signs. And, Mr. Chair, if I may, I forgot, I did have an inquiry from a commissioner about the times and going as late as 10 o'clock. And I did speak to the school district about that to determine what was common practice at the schools and if there was a sense of when it was necessary to have the sign illuminated versus when you turn the lights off. And what their sort of default setting is 6:30 a.m. to 10 p.m. So this is actually a little more restrictive than the default setting they've been using at other schools.
Okay, thank you. Any other commissioners have any questions? Is the applicant here or the applicant's representative? Please step forward.
Mark Johnson, Carson City Schools.
Thank you. Have you read the staff report and the conditions that the staff is recommending?
Yes.
And you accept those conditions?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Do you have anything you want to add to the staff? Or?
No, I'm good.
Okay. Does any commissioner have any questions for the applicant? Go ahead.
You don't have to ask. I mean, you know that. Go ahead.
Yeah, 10 o'clock at night. Why? It's a school. It's for children.
It's the practice what we have at Eagle Valley and Carson Middle. That's just what they've been doing now. That's the way they've been operating.
Okay, that doesn't make it right. Why at 10 o'clock? Are there going to be children present? That is quite a ways off of Salomon to have a sign, actually. What advantage is there at that hour of night? Who is actually going to read that?
Only if, like, parents are going by. We're using the signs for school. We're using it for community events that are going on. They could be seeing the activities that are going on. The parents could be going by and seeing it.
Okay. Ms. Green.
Is this going to be similar to, because I think Carson Middle has one, but it's digital? Is the Carson Middle one LED?
This will be LED, yes. It's real similar to Carson Middle and Eagle Valley.
Yeah, but the LEDs, those are really bright. Like, I've seen those signs, and even when they're dimmed, they're a lot brighter than the one at Carson Middle.
And it's going to be dimmed according to what the requirements are.
All right, and I'm still, this is located in, like, real residential, besides Solomon's Big Street. I do have issues with the time running until 10.
It's going to be back, like, 100 and...
Yeah, I drove by. I'm not so, the ones across Solomon kind of have a wall, but the other 4 properties that are kitty corner and the digital light, I've noticed because I live near Carson Middle, kind of stays in one area, doesn't project like, as much as the LEDs.
The one on Solomon is going to be facing Solomon and it won't be facing the other
correct
side of the street though.
But the LED lights are bright and they go. Like, and they go. I've seen them. I mean, but, I do think it's a great communication.
But the sign will be dimmable.
Yes, and that's what I wanted to know. So thank you.
Yes.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you. Is anyone from the public here to address this item? Seeing no comment, I will bring that back to the commission. What is your pleasure? Any comments?
I'm not good with the hours of operation.
Okay. And Ms. Green, that was your concern also?
What time does the dimming occur?
According to this, we have to have it dimmable. As part of the operation conditions that we have to bring. It's part of the condition.
I think I might know where it is. Do you mind if I jump in?
Yeah, well,
okay. So the following are operational conditions that apply. Number 9.
Yes, that's it.
The sign brightness shall be limited to 0.3 foot candles over ambient light. I don't know what a foot candle is, but I imagine that it would dim in accordance with however bright it is outside. Is that correct? Okay.
Just a second. Mr. Plummel, can you make an explanation of the brightness and
Yeah, I know it's hard to explain. That's kind of meaningless. Just saying a foot candle or a third of a foot candle. It's because it's an electronic measurement. We have a meter that we use. But what it's saying is that when the light is on, that there's a given distance that's in the policy of how far you measure it back based on how the sign is. And when the sign is on at full bright, it cannot be more than one third of a foot candle brighter than when the sign is off relative to whatever the ambient background is. So in a dark area like this, that's going to be a less bright sign than it would be on a commercial area where there's a lot of other lights already around there.
Okay, thank you for that. Mr. Sattler.
Or possibly Hemrick staff. Again, the hours are the same for the high school, the charter school over on that we approved and all that sort of stuff. Correct?
Yeah. Well, I think the hours are probably consistent with what they were. We had a special use permit for the more recent one was Eagle Valley. She asked the question. We haven't received any complaints on those existing signs. They might not be in exact same situation as this one, but if they've been operating those till 10 o'clock.
And the high school, and for example, the one out front here, et cetera, they're all in the
Well, the one out front here is in a commercial corridor, so that's probably not comparable, but relative to the other, I believe they're the same conditions as they are at other schools, and probably for the, another recent one was at the Community Health Center on Long Street. Yeah. Was another one.
I have a question.
Okay.
Is that adjustable?
The dimming, is that adjustable?
It has to be.
Per the condition, it has to be, so that's...
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
so
pretty much standard now for
that
sign.
If it turns out to be too bright, we can perhaps have it adjusted. Maybe that could be part of the consideration. Does it already?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Are there any, once again, is there anyone from the public here who, a resident nearby, or have we received any communications from any?
Right. You do have one correspondence, and it wasn't clear if it was regarding this item or our next item.
Right, and that actually addressed an issue that is out of our purview, so. Know that can be considered.
No, and I think with the dimming and the fact that the commission's going to, or the planning is going to check it once it's all done, I think that'll self-correct itself if it is too bright. I think that they can say that's too much. So I'm content. Thank you for answering my questions.
Mr. Sattler.
Just for further information, one of the ones we approved earlier, they came for to come back within a year and there were no problems or whatever. So that we did for one of the charter schools, I believe.
We're gonna make a motion. Okay.
I move to approve SUP-16-018, a special use permit to allow a single-faced LED changeable message center display sign at 15 11 Firebox Road, APN 010-041-30, property zone public based on the findings and subject to conditions of approval in the staff report.
Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Five, one in favor. Mr. Owen, opposed. Item F2, special use permit. SUP-16-019 for possible action. To consider a request from the Carson City School District, property owner Carson City School District, Mark Twain School, for a special use permit to allow a single-faced LED changeable message center display sign on property zone public located at 2111 Carriage Crest Drive, APN 002-101-46. Staff?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hope Sullivan, the planning manager. I provided for you an aerial that identifies where the property is located on Carriage Crest Drive. Again, this project is subject, or the sign is subject to a special use permit because it's in the public zoning district. This, again, is a proposal for an 8-foot by 4-foot electric message sign, so a total of 32 square feet. It will be on the building wall facing Carriage Crest Drive, and it's located 165 feet east of the property line. On the aerial, we've shown you where on the building it will be located. We've included a picture of the building facade that also shows you where the sign is proposed to be located, and a view of the neighborhood looking west when standing by the sign. The next one's the view of the proposed sign location from the residential area to the west, so you can see the landscaping that's between the road and the school. I've included the special use permit findings, and there are 7 findings. The staff has reviewed these findings in the staff report. Again, we are including conditions that are consistent with the International Sign Association recommendations for electronic signs, and we are recommending approval subject to conditions because we can make the findings of fact. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer those.
Thank you. Are there any questions for staff? Is the applicant? you accept the conditions?
Yes, we will.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for the applicant on this one?
I would have a question, and it would be the same question. I don't see the need for anything past 9 o'clock personally.
And as far as the district goes, we will work with our neighborhood and our neighbors. If we get any complaints, we would adjust those times. I'm not setting the policy. That's the policy that the schools currently have.
Correct.
And the conditions we have that the planning commission's come back and said we can go until 10, and we might not go until 10, but that's what our current schools are doing right now, the two middle schools that we have.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Is anyone in the public here to address this item? Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the commission. Any discussion?
I think it's in both these signs, there's no one from the public who's shown up to make comment on it. So I obviously they were all notified, so there mustn't be a difficulty. So, and they're offering to be flexible if there is problems. Those kids from the public are going to that school, so I'm sure they would make adjustments if necessary. So I don't have a problem.
Okay, thank you for that. Any further comments? I'll entertain a motion.
Another one. Do it again. I move to approve SUP-16-019, a special use permit to allow a single-phased LED changeable message center display sign at 2111 Carriage Crest Drive, APN 002-101-460, on property zone public based on the findings and subject to conditions of approval in the staff report.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
They Motion carries 5-1. Mr. Owen opposed. Okay. Moving on to item F3, which is a two-part item, F3A and F3B. The commission will consider both. We will hear the actions together, but then vote on the items separately. Item F3A is a variance request, VAR-16-022, for possible action, to consider a request from Bella Lago LLC, property owner Bella Lago LLC, for a variance to allow the reduction of required open space per unit for residential development in a non-residential zoning district on property zoned general commercial located at 1600 Airport Road, APN 008-312-04, and item F3B, special use permit, SUP-16-021, for possible action to consider a request from Bella Lago LLC, property owner Bella Lago LLC, for a special use permit to allow the addition of 64 multifamily apartments within the existing 175-unit Bella Lago apartment complex on property zone general commercial located at 1600 Airport Road, APN 008-312-04. Staff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hope Sullivan, the planning manager. I'll just point out Mike Raley of Rubicon, who's the applicant, is present. I've included for you in these first two slides aerials of the site so that you can have a context of where it is vis-a-vis Highway 50, as well as it's on Airport Road across the street from single-family homes and adjacent to the south to multifamily homes. On the second aerial, you can see the existing building and parking lot configuration, as well as the tennis courts in the existing area where they're proposing to put the additional buildings. As the chair noted, the existing conditions are 175 apartments. These are comprised of studio and one-bedroom apartments. There are 272 existing parking spaces. And if you had the opportunity to visit the site, you'll see there's been some deferred maintenance. If you look at the areas between buildings, if you look at the area by the tennis court, the landscaping hasn't been maintained. In large part, it's bare dirt. The tennis courts have been cracked and have not been maintained, and you'll see dumpsters that aren't screened and the like. The applicant is proposing to add 64 apartments in 8 buildings. These will be 56 of these apartments will be 2-bedroom, and 8 would be 3-bedroom. 32 of the units are proposed to have patios. The applicant also proposes to add 125 new parking spaces, to build a 2,000-square-foot clubhouse slash gym, and to improve 40,792 square feet of open space area. I've included elevations of the building, and it's fairly similar in style to the existing buildings that are there, with the exception of what you'll see on the rear elevation is the fencing for the 32 patio units. Right now, the units do not have private open space amenities. On the site plan, what you'll see is the applicant has included a detailed landscape plan on the site plan, and they are seeking the variance for the landscaping. I point this out because you'll see that they are not proposing to landscape the entire area. When you get to the variance, you'll see staff has recommended conditions that would require upgrading all landscaped areas. When we consider the common open space requirements, it's derived from the unit count. So what is required on the site given existing unit count and proposed unit count is 59,750 square feet. The applicant is proposing a total of 45,992 square feet. In the applicant's application, you may have seen that they also are showing open space in the setback areas. They cannot, per the code, they do not get credit for those areas. So the numbers that I provided in this PowerPoint do not include any open space that's in the setback. I will note that I have included the 2,000-square-foot clubhouse slash gym, though, in the open space because that will be a recreational amenity for the residents. when you consider the variance to determine whether or not they can do this project without meeting the required amount of open space, you do have to consider three required findings of fact. The staff has been able to make these findings with two, I think, really important conditions. The first condition is that the new clubhouse be constructed in phase one, and that the clubhouse building receive its certificate of occupancy prior to any other proposed building receiving a certificate of occupancy. The reason for this is the applicant's not required to provide a building. A building's a really great amenity. You can use it in the rain and the cold, whereas other outdoor amenities, you don't have that benefit. So staff recognizes this. So if the applicant does receive a variance to not meet the open space requirements, we think it's really important to ensure that this amenity be one of the absolute first projects completed. This does not mean that other projects cannot be under construction. Everyone can get their building permit on the same day. This one hits the finish line first. Also, staff is recommending a condition that all areas intended to serve as common open space shall be improved with landscaping, consistent with the open space requirements identified in Section 1.18.6 of the development standards. At the time of the building permit application, a revised landscaping plan demonstrating compliance with Section 1.18.6 is required to be submitted. You'll recall, if you visit the site, you saw that there is a lot of deferred maintenance. And so staff sees this as an opportunity to really upgrade the site and benefit all of the residents. So we are recommending, should this variance be approved, that all open space areas, even areas in between those existing buildings, be improved, and the applicant demonstrate that they're providing not just recreation, the quantitative requirements for open space, but also do a better job meeting the qualitative. And the qualitative means the areas are intended as play areas. So there's width requirements and so on. So we would be looking for detailed information on that. Again, because this is a residential use in a non-residential zoning district, the applicant is required to seek a special use permit. The site's already been established as a residential use. The idea of it being redeveloped as a non-residential use, short of eliminating the existing use, I don't think is something that's going to happen. It isn't a residential area, and I think bringing new residents to the commercial area along Highway 50 will be a positive experience and consistent with the mixed-use goals of the master plan. So staff has made the required findings for the special use permit, and we are recommending approval for both the variance and the special use permit. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions for staff? Mr. Sattler.
I have two. The open space improvements in the existing area, is that like the clubhouse has to be done before the other can be done, or is it all he can wait till the project's done to improve the existing landscaping, et cetera?
I don't recall assigning a timing element to that. And I think the thinking was that when you're under construction, you run the risk of damaging the landscaping, so landscaping's usually later.
They would
later.
Probably do it all at the end when they do the landscaping for the new.
Yes, and I'll double-check to make sure, but I don't recall assigning a timing
and
element.
And my only other question problem is possibly with the parking. They're going from 1.55 to 1.66, but the existing buildings are all studio and one bedroom, which most cases would be maximum probably of two vehicles, often one, because there's probably only one person in there, where these are going to be two-bedroom and three-bedroom, where you, in essence, could have a family with a child driving, you know, could have three vehicles. And yet he still will be almost 20% or so under the required parking. And you're comfortable with that?
Yes, sir, because what the code says is that for dwelling units, you should have two parking spaces, or you can utilize a standard by an acceptable, I don't know, it's a professional agency or organization like the Institute of Transportation Engineers. The Institute of Transportation Engineers, in looking at apartment complexes, has identified that I believe it was the peak use on a Sunday, is 1.3 parking spaces per unit. And so absent any of this, they could have argued, well, we should be 1.3 spaces, and per the code, we would have accepted that because it's from an acceptable source.
So in essence, theoretically, there's 0.7 extra already that could help assist in that new area or whatever. Okay.
Correct. And they also are supplying, I think it was 1.8 for 1.9 for the new one. So if you look at how many parking spaces, so the deficiency is improving, if you will.
That. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Any other questions for staff? Mr. Salerno.
It appears that they're not really landscaping any of the existing spaces where the existing buildings are, and driving through there, that looks pretty bad. It really does. Shouldn't that be a part of the requirement that they also landscape those buildings, such as 1, 2, 3, et cetera?
I'll answer that question. There is a condition of approval, in the conditions of approval, that they improve.
Oh, it, the was there?
Yes.
But it's not shown on the plan,
no,
of course.
No.
Okay. The other question that I have is, I don't see where the barbecues and picnic tables that are referred to in the documentation are located. Is that to be also submitted at a later date?
That would be correct. What the staff alluded to in the presentation is, when you look at the open space requirement, there's a quantitative requirement, how many square feet do you need? And then there's a qualitative requirement that talks about the percentage that should be usable space with amenities. And so staff has identified the need to demonstrate compliance with the qualitative aspect of the open space, and to include things like a play structure and picnic tables. And that is one of the conditions that's in the conditions. I can look up exactly which number that is.
So that is coming, is what you're saying?
Correct.
Because I don't see it in the plan.
No, it's not there. And what the plans show is landscaping very close to the new buildings, and with basically to the with nothing outside that area.
Okay, there was one reference that I read, I think, by the Parks Department of a pool, but there is no swimming pool of any kind, if I understand correctly.
Yes, the Parks Department commented on this when this was a major project review. They did not provide comments when it came in for the variance and the special use permit. So what I forwarded to you was their comments as a major project review when the swimming pool was contemplated.
Thank you.
Any other questions for staff? Okay, I'll wait for mine. Is there anyone here, or actually, would the applicant like to address this?
Good evening. For the record, Mike Rayleigh with Rubicon Design Group, here on behalf of Bella Lago LLC. The LLC owner, Ben Farahi, is also with me in the audience tonight. I think Hope did a great job going through the project. This really will be a significant upgrade to the Bella Lago site. The landscaping that is referred to in between the buildings, the existing deficient, Mr. Farahi is actually in the process, whether this was approved or not, of upgrading that. So that will be rolled in with the new improvements, so that will all be taken care of. So aesthetically, the project is going to look, you know, tremendously much, much better. In terms of the variance in the open space, it's a little tricky when you look at those numbers. When you realize those buildings are nearly 40 years old, it's hard to retrofit private open space to existing buildings that were never set up for balconies and patios and that sort of thing. And that's where a big chunk of our deficiency comes from, is those existing buildings, which really does create a hardship in terms of meeting the current codes. So the new buildings meet all the codes, and parked with current code, and then it's kind of doing the best we can to bring those other buildings up. So really, at the end of the day, it's a benefit to all the existing residents, because they'll have the new clubhouse, they'll have the new play areas, the barbecues, that sort of thing. So it's really a win-win for everyone. Also, I would like to note on the parking, in addition to the ITE numbers, we did do our own little on-site parking study of the existing units, saw that we had a significant surplus of parking left over. So we're very comfortable with those parking numbers. We are in agreement with all the conditions. I did submit a letter, and I think Hope provided this to you. Just to clarify, and I don't want to put words in Hope's mouth, but I think she concurs with this, that specifically conditions 2, 8, 11, 14, 20, 21, 22, and 23, which pretty much pertain to building code items, that those are in reference to the new buildings, not the existing buildings, that we wouldn't be expected to bring existing buildings up to current standards. So we just wanted to clarify that on the record. And then the condition, as far as the clubhouse being constructed in phase one, I think Hope was fine with our wording that the new clubhouse shall be constructed in phase one. No final certificate of occupancy for new units shall be issued until a certificate of occupancy is issued for the clubhouse. So just a clarification that, you know, based on how we're out there doing that, that clubhouse will be under construction in phase one regardless. But if we finish a building off before, we understand we can't get the final CFO, but we can get a temporary CFO so we can start doing interior improvements and that sort of thing. So just housekeeping matters for the most part. So other than that, I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Mr. Sattler.
Just curiosity, since it's going from largely single studio and single bedroom apartments and mixing, which is going to probably draw more families and stuff in, is your basic mix of people that are there now happy with this coming along and all that?
It's my understanding that a lot of the existing tenants were wanting to see if there was two bedrooms available, and there simply just isn't any. So, and there's people coming into the leasing office, you know, more and more looking for two and three bedroom offices. So we think it's overall provides a better balance.
Thank you.
Mr. Salerno.
I think that it's a good use of the space. I think it's pretty lighted looking, the center. I think the buildings themselves are quite satisfactory looking, the existing ones. They are brick exteriors. And if is it correct that the new ones will be stucco as shown, I believe, in the drawings?
Correct. And there are, those are preliminary elevations. We're going to try to draw in, you know, to make it so it blends. We don't want it to look out of place. So we'll bring in elements that complement the existing buildings and make it look more like a seamless project than the old and the new, so to speak.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Mr. Owen.
How long has the Bella Largo group owned that property?
It's my understanding that they've owned it for about 10 years.
So they were perfectly acceptable with the condition of the property surrounding the buildings until it became an issue for putting in more buildings.
Actually, if you look over the last 10 years, they've done quite a few improvements. They did significant improvements along Airport Road. They've done a lot of, there was, when they acquired the property, there was a lot of utility issues that needed to be dealt with, deteriorating infrastructure on site. So they put a tremendous amount of money into bringing the infrastructure on site up to code so that this could come. So it's, this is kind of the final phase of those upgrades.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
One more. The new landscaping plans or the completed landscaping plans will be brought to the planning department, if I understand correctly.
Correct.
Is that the situation?
Correct. Yeah, and that landscape plan, we never had any intent not to do. We just, that was to more show what new landscaping is adding, and everything will be rehabilitated that's there. And actually, along Airport Road is in process. So,
thank you.
This is a question for staff, but I may have missed it or overlooked it or forgotten it, but is the density consistent with multifamily housing requirements?
Yes, it is. And if you need the number, I'll look it up. I can't remember. Sorry. But, yes, they are consistent.
Okay. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you.
Is there anyone here from the public who wishes to address this item? We'll bring it back to the commission for discussion. And just so to remember, we have to approve the variance or deny the variance. If we deny the variance, then it's back to the drawing board for the project. Mr. Salerno.
I'd like to move for approval and... if that's appropriate, that would be on the variance, and that's VAR-16-
There should be a motion.
Yeah.
A proposed motion.
16-022. I thought we would use this one, don't we? Don't. Yeah, that's the one. That's what I was doing.
Okay.
Just a moment. to find the right page again. There we are. Okay. I'll continue. I move to approve VAR-16-022, a variance request to allow the reduction of required open space per unit for residential development in a non-residential zoning district so as to allow a total amount of open space of approximately 40,792 square feet. That relates to 0.94 acres, where 59,750 square feet, which is 1.37 acres, is required on property located at 1600 Airport Road, that's APN 008-312-04, based on the findings and subject to the recommended conditions of approval in the staff report.
Okay, we have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion on the variance request? All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Nay.
Nay. Two nays. Mr. Owen and myself. So the motion passes, which means that we can move on to the special use permit.
Would you like to make the motion? Okay, I'll make the motion. Regarding the special use permit, I move to approve SUP-16-021, a special use permit requested to allow the addition of 64 multifamily apartments within the existing 175-unit Bella Lago apartment complex on property zoned General Commercial, GC, located at 1600 Airport Road, APN 008-312-04, based on the findings and subject to the recommended conditions of approval in the staff report.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second that also.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
Nay.
5-1. Mr. Owen opposed. Item F4, F4A, another variance, VAR-16-024 for possible action, to consider a request from Capstone Communities property owner Anderson Family Associates for a variance to reduce the required driveway approach, minimum parcel size and dimensions, and the minimum rear yard setback for single-family attached residential lots in the multifamily apartment MFA zoning district on property located at on Little Lane, APN 004-021-13. And just as a note on that motion or on that item, the applicant has withdrawn the request for the variance of the rear yard setback. And then item F4B, TSM-16-023 for possible action, to make a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors regarding a tentative subdivision map application from Capstone Communities, property owner Anderson Family Associates, to create 147 single-family attached residential lots on 10.31 acres on property zone multifamily apartment, MFA, located on Little Lane, APN 004-021-13. Staff?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hope Sullivan, Planning Manager. I'd like to introduce Chris Baker from Banhard. He's representing the applicant today. The first slide is of an aerial of the site. What you'll see to the north is single-family homes. To the west is Tanglewood, which is multifamily. And to the south and to the east is vacant land. Sorry, my paper's stuck. Here we go. The proposal is for 147 single-family attached units. The minimum lot size would be 1,005 square feet. The proposed density is 14 units per acre. Perimeter setbacks to the north would be 30 feet. So as the chair indicated, the applicant will be complying with the setback adjacent to the single-family homes. Your plans don't reflect that, but since the applicant withdrew the request for the variance, it will be 30 feet. To the south is 20 feet, to the east 19 feet, and to the west 20 feet. The applicant is providing 2 garage spaces per unit, as well as 74 guest spaces on site, which is consistent with the code. Phasing has been discussed, but phasing plan has not been submitted. What I've included here is a site plan that shows the building layout and the street layout, and this was in the applicant's package. I've also included building elevations, which will show you what each building looks like per the applicant's application. I want to speak really specifically to density because we've heard a lot of comments on density with respect to this project. The subject property is zoned multifamily apartments. Per that zoning, you can have 29 to 36 units per acre. The master plan designation is high density residential. That means you can have 8 to 36 units per acre. Arbor Villas is proposing 14 units per acre. So there's been just inquiries and sort of comments that the density is greater than allowed and they were seeking a variance for density and so on. None of that is true. The applicant's pretty much on the low end, to be honest. So I just wanted to be really clear about density because we are going to talk about lot sizes, but I don't want that to be confused with density. So the applicant is requesting 2 variances. One is from the development standard 1.17.3A, which says a driveway approach from a property line to the garage door should be 20 feet. And the second variance is from the code section 1804-190, which says the minimum lot area is 6,000 square feet, the minimum lot width is 60 feet, or is required to be 60 feet, and the minimum lot depth is required to be 150 feet. Staff is supporting these variances, and the reason why is this is it's not a multifamily project. That's where we get, this is why we need a variance. This project is technically a single-family project. It's single family attached. You saw the elevations of the building, and my comment is the man on the street wouldn't know if that was ownership or rental. They wouldn't know if it was multifamily or single family attached. It looks like the same thing. You can't really tell what the ownership is when you look at this physical building and this development. Had this been apartments, there would be no tentative map. There would be no subdivision of land. If this had been apartment, and then in terms of the driveway, they're choosing to provide garages. They're not required to. They could have parking lots and meet their parking requirement. But because they're having public streets and they are providing 2-car garages to meet the parking requirement for every single dwelling unit, they are backloading so that what they're seeking to do is have a 7-foot driveway, which would preclude any parking in the driveway. Their streets are narrow, so it precludes parking in the streets as well, which is why they're providing the 74 guest spaces. So that's 0.5 spaces per unit per the code when you have a street that won't accommodate on-street parking. So I don't believe we're going to have spillover from a parking perspective because they are meeting their requirements. Because they chose to provide each unit with the amenity of a garage as opposed to open-air parking, they have a driveway, and they're seeking to not have a 20-foot-long driveway. In terms of the lot size, single-family is allowed in the MFA zoning district. I suspect when the code was drafted, the thinking was the single-family would be single-family detached. 6,000 square feet is the smallest lot size we have in the single-family. These are attached. The footprint of the building will be the lot. And then you have the courtyard areas where the buildings open up to the courtyards and the open space. So because of the model they're using, which isn't the traditional single-family detached model, they're seeking a lot size that's less than the 6,000 square feet, indeed a lot size that's significantly less. But again, they're not exceeding the allowable density. I think it's the type of product that they're providing. And again, if this was a for rent, there would be no subdivision of land. There would be no lot. They could just do it. And so staff feels this is consistent with multifamily development, and we are supporting these variances. When you consider the variances, you do have to make three findings of fact, and the staff has spoken specifically to those in the staff report. In terms of the tentative subdivision map, you do need to consider 12 different points. When you consider a tentative subdivision map, the staff has reviewed each of those points in the staff report, and we are recommending approval of the tentative map subject to conditions. So the staff is supportive of the variance subject to conditions because we can make the required findings. And the staff is supportive of the tentative subdivision map based on the ability to make findings and subject to the conditions of approval. Having said that, we did provide you with supplemental conditions of approval in your packet. There were three modifications. One of the modifications was the timing of the final map review based on a potential for phasing. One of them was regarding the timing of construction of parkland. Based on the timing of the impact, based on the traffic impact analysis. And the third modification was regarding the pathway along Little Lane and the width of that pathway. So that's with your late materials is a memo that the city engineer wrote to me, and I wrote a cover memo to you with those revised conditions. So we would suggest that motion recommend approval subject to the modified conditions that are in the memo dated April 27th from the planning manager to the planning commission. And with that, Mr. Chair, I was somewhat brief, but I'm happy to answer questions.
Thank you. Any commissioner have any questions for staff? No, it looks like we have a few. Mr. Sadler.
There is no lot size requirements or lot size parameters for attached single family. We don't have that set up here in our area.
Actually, in the staff report, I actually reference where the code does have language if we were in a non-residential zone. But for residential zones, we don't have language to accommodate that.
Okay, Ms. Green.
I think I emailed you, Hope, about the page 12, number 2. The fire department radiuses, has that been fixed? Okay. I didn't get any feedback if it had been fixed or not. Okay.
I'm sorry. That has not been fixed, but the civil project engineer has been in discussions with the fire marshal, and based on those discussions, the fire marshal was comfortable bringing this forward to the planning commission with a condition stating they do need to comply with the turning radii.
Okay. Mr. Salerno.
Yes, it appears that they're requesting, and I think you're recommending, that the streets throughout the system be public. That is, they'll be maintained, policed, or by the city, and everything that goes along with it. And it appears also that these are for sale condominiums is really what they are, or townhouses, whatever you want to call it. That's what they are. Right. Or wrong.
Correct on both.
Correct on both. Okay. That.
Who made that comment?
That's all I have at this point in time. Yeah.
Danny Rotter, for the record.
Thank you. I have a question for staff. The when you take the open space and the individual lot sizes, what do you get for an average with the open space and the lot size?
You mean how much square footage per unit?
Yes.
I don't think I did that math. Let me double check. Yes, page 7 of the staff report. Let's see, the app, given the price, that's not it.
So I'll say, you know, and that's a per-unit acreage is comparable for a multifamily project, but so the lot size for multifamily, the minimum lot size is 6,000 square feet. Mm-hmm. That's for, that means you can create a 6,000-foot lot and put a fourplex on it, put a sixplex on it. It's not that there's 6,000 square feet for one unit. So that's not, I don't know if that's an apples-to-apples comparison family. To what you're getting. For single family.
6,000 square feet of lot size.
Minimum lot size.
If you're in a single family zoning district, sure. But,
no, but you can.
No, your mic's not on.
If you were doing the single family residential within this zoning district, which is allowed allowed use, you'd still need each single family home, unattached single family home would require a 6,000 square foot lot, just as a duplex or a triplex or a quadruplex would require a 6,000 square foot lot.
The minimum, without a variance, the minimum lot size to subdivide the property is 6,000 square feet.
Okay.
It's not it's not a per unit. I don't know if you're trying to.
Well, no, with the open space added in.
So it's about about 3,000 square feet per unit.
Okay. So it's okay. That answers my question. Thank you. Okay. Any other questions for staff? Staff have any more comments? Okay. It's the applicant. The applicant is Mr. Chris Baker from Manhart.
Yes, Chris Baker with Manhart Consulting here on behalf of the applicant, Capstone Communities. I'm joined in the audience by Mike Branson with Capstone. First, I'd like to formally welcome Hope to her new position. From what I've seen so far, you guys are in great hands, and I look forward to working with her in the future. I do have a quick PowerPoint here. I know this is kind of a lot to digest, and I think what we're running into is some of the scenarios that we've run into with PUDs in the past. We've utilized that PUD as a mechanism we've utilized that PUD process in the past to allow for something like this. And you've seen numerous of those, and I've presented, numerous of those in the last probably year or so. In that case, the variances are included within the PUD request, and actually they're usually more variances than the two that we're requesting. So to put this in context, I'm going to run through this real quick. A lot of it will kind of reiterate what Hope has said, but I'd like to specifically get into those variances and really try to help you guys understand why we're doing them, and that the net result is actually a for sale, better, less dense project than would be allowed by right now without being in front of you. Just going to major project review and going to building permit. So, again, Hope talked about the location, 10.3 acre site located north of Little Lane, south of Root Street, and south of Salomon. What you've got there is Little Lane on the south. You've got a multifamily apartment there to the west, a single family to the north. There's undeveloped multifamily duplex to the east, and then it's actually commercial to the south. Hope touched on this also, master plan designation of high density residential, which does allow up to 36 dwelling units per acre. To put that in context, we're talking about 371 units on this property. The zoning designation is in conformance with the master plan, so you're looking at 371 units on 10 acres. As you can see, the current land use is vacant. Just like Hope stated, the request in front of you is for a tentative map to create 147 units. There are two variances, and I understand typically in the planning world, variances is relative, it's pretty consistent with a four-letter word. And in a lot of cases, I'm in agreement with that. But I think when we put our common sense hats on, the point is to provide a better overall project. And the only way to do so is to allow for these two variances. And the last bullet point up there is, it really kind of talks about what I'd introed with, is the application in front of you is actually only in front of you because we're trying to provide a for-sale single-family product versus a multifamily product in a multifamily zone. So I want to kind of slow down and say, if we were to do 371 apartments, you wouldn't see this. This wouldn't have been noticed to the public. this would have gone to major project review and could have gone right to building permit with conditions issued from staff. So I think that's a very important point. Okay, project description. Again, 147 single-family attached units. I hear condo, I hear townhome. Technically not condos. Condos usually overlap airspace. These, the footprint and the unit is self-contained in one piece of real estate. So townhome, totally correct. Condo, in my opinion, not correct. Open space has been brought up. The site is 10.3 acres, plus or minus. Open space provided, 68,588 square feet. I like to put that in content or in context. The required open space is actually half of that, 36,750. We're providing 2 and 3 bedroom units, square footage ranging in a little over 1,200 to a little over 1,400 square feet. And with that, one of the variances obviously is because we are trying to provide garages. So that variance does not affect the parking count at all. Each of these units will have their own two-car garage with direct access to the unit, and we will also provide the required 74 off-street parking stalls, kind of, as you can see there on the landscape plan, dispersed pretty evenly throughout the site. Okay, let's get into the four-letter words here. Okay, so the first one is a variance for the minimum driveway approach. So I want to put that further in context. Again, we're working with multifamily apartment zoning, which, although single-family use is allowed, they didn't really contemplate single-family use being here. And I think if you read the code, it's pretty evident that they didn't. So when you're doing a multifamily apartment, your driveway approach and your setbacks are measured from the exterior boundary of the property. So in this case, you know, if you can kind of visualize that landscape plan, it would be the whole 10 acres. So the property boundary would be Little Lane, you know, in the north and then the west, and then, you know, you got your 10-acre box. Since we are providing for sale lots, we actually are creating 147 small lots throughout that, dispersed evenly with a public street network. So because we're doing such, we have to actually measure from that internal street network to our individual parcels. So again, this doesn't have any effect on anybody outside of a future homeowner in here, and it does not have any effect on the parking count. What it does is it allows for, one, garages. It allows for, two, a better overall streetscape. So what this really is, you know, I've got two pictures here. One's a front rendering and one's a rear rendering. This is really an alley-loaded product type. So once you enter the site on the public street network, that's where your garages are. But from the exterior boundaries, you're going to see the front of house. So you're going to see the top picture. So if you're driving along Little Lane and you don't own a home in here, you won't see a sea of garages. You will see nice, you know, articulation, nice treatments. You'll see balconies. You'll see variations in color. You'll see nice roofs. Not that you won't in the back, but we all know that front of houses usually look a lot better than back of houses. So in an attempt to provide a unique product, in an attempt to provide garages, in an attempt to provide a for sale product, this variance is, it's like a necessary evil. And again, I really want to stress that this variance, if approved, does not affect the parking at all. I know a lot of times in PUDs, frankly, that I've brought in front of you before, we've asked for parking requirements to be reduced. That's not the case here. Okay, the next one. And Hope did a great job touching on this. This is the minimum parcel size variance. Again, this is completely driven by the for sale use. If we were to have multifamily for lease product, our minimum parcel size would actually be 10.3 acres because we're not creating any new parcels. So again, all of this is driven strictly because we want to provide a less dense product than what is allowed, realistically. or on the lower end, should I say. It would be incorrect to say a less dense. On the lower end of the density, and something that will be owner-occupied, for the most part, I'm sure, and something that kind of meets a need in the Carson community of, you know, that, you know, lower-end price point for first-time homeowners, for people who are, you know, maybe transitioning, downsizing, et cetera. Let's see here. What else do I have up there? And again, I want to stress, and Hope did a great job of this, it in no way allows for additional density. Again, that number of 371 units is what could go here. We're still only proposing 147. You know, and you combine that with the, you know, 68,000 square feet plus of open space, you know, this is going to be a good project. As you can see by the audience, we've piqued a lot of people's interest, which in my opinion, as a planner, is a good thing. We did not have a neighborhood meeting, and if I would have known that prior to the release of the staff report and some correspondence with Hope, I would have absolutely had one. But reading the letters that were included as public comment, you know, there's really three things that people are worried about. The first is the extension of Parkland Avenue. This, realistically, if you're familiar with the area, Parkland now on the south end, dead ends into Little Lane, and then Parkland on the north end, dead ends to just east of the project site. So knowing that and knowing the requirements in the master plan and knowing, you know, that that Carson City wants connectivity there, prior to submitting this, we actually met with Patrick and agreed to do whatever we could to provide that connectivity to meet the master plan policies, et cetera. So this is really driven by Carson City. Trust me, I'm sure Mike and the guys from Capstone would love not to have to build you know, secondary access up there and really what would be considered kind of an off-site improvement. But what we see is it's going to be better for the community as a whole in the long run. The second thing is views. Again, these buildings are 28 and a half feet tall. So two stories, and not a very tall two story in that. Again, the zoning designation allows for buildings up to 45 foot in height. So to put that back in context, we could not be here, you know, and we could be gone through the major project review process and have buildings that are 45 foot tall and ground could be broken right now. So, you know, that is an important point to make. And that combined with the fact that the original request did ask for a variance on the north boundary. When we discussed it with staff and when we saw some of the outcry from the neighbors, honestly, we were wrong. I'm going to own it. We were wrong. We pulled it, and we think they were right. You know, we'll do everything we can to meet code and preserve, you know, what they have there. Just like any project, you know, we want to be good neighbors, but we do have a right to develop, you know, what's there. And then the last is density, which Hope did do a great job touching on. And I know I've been kind of throwing out these numbers of worst case scenario, 371 units, et cetera, but I think it's important because that was kind of the basis of a lot of the complaints. And really they're just kind of unfounded in my opinion. And I'll kind of close it up with, again, if we weren't trying to provide a for sale product and garages, or really just that, if we weren't trying to provide a for sale product, we wouldn't be here. And yes, this could have been handled in the PUD process, and then there wouldn't be variance findings of any sort. But because there is only two variances, and they're internal to the project, and in my opinion, and reading the report and listening to Hope and staff's opinion, that they're kind of a necessary evil here to provide an overall better project. So with that, I'll close it up and answer any questions you may have.
Any questions for the applicant? Go ahead, Mr. Sattler.
Two things in driving by that area, or one thing in driving by that area, it seems with that 8 or 9 homes to the north.
Yeah, there's eight, I think.
And from looking at those homes, they all face either east or west. In other words, it's the end of the homes that are facing your project. I didn't see any homes. I don't think that their front or backyard was looking, or is there?
Yeah, there is. I believe the two on the end, and honestly, I'm sure the public.
I was looking from little lanes, so I couldn't tell.
The two on the end, I believe, are side yards, and the interior ones are all rear yards.
Oh, okay. Yes. Okay, I couldn't tell that from little lanes, that's why I was asking. Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Mr. Salerno.
Private yards. Are there any private spaces that go along with these units?
Besides balconies, no.
The exterior elevations show a balcony, but the floor plans do not. There is no balcony on the floor plans. So that's just a drawing that shows what looks like a balcony, but they're not there.
Yes.
And I'm sure what I'm saying.
I think Mike Brantz from Capstone could jump up and answer that question.
What I'm saying, if you look at the floor plans and you look at the upper level of the floor plans, there is no balcony shown here on these drawings, but there certainly is there. And I guess my major question is, it seems to me that these units would have zero private space where you could have a pet, let the pet out into a 8x10 space, or a child that needs a private space. There's public space, but there's absolutely, as I see it, no private space at all.
Okay. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mike Branson with Capstone Communities. To address question number one, balconies, all four units will have a balcony on the second floor for private space.
Are you going to use these floor plans?
We'll be using
the ones that are presented to us?
We'll be using the four floor plans, but they'll have balconies on them. We've already drawn them, and they have balconies.
Then it means you're going to have a balcony off of a bedroom?
Oh, you're going to have a balcony off of the second bedroom or the bathroom.
They're all off the master bedroom suites.
You know, it doesn't make any sense. I'm an architect, so I look at things like that. But I see no place in the front of the unit to do a balcony with these plans.
All of those come off the master bedrooms.
Then if all the master bedrooms happen to be over the garages, that's the other side, and there are no balcony
the secondary
shown.
Bedrooms are over the garages. Pardon? The secondary bedrooms are over the garages, and the master.
Well, yes, one of them does. But they
all face that.
Yes,
way.
But if they're over the master bedroom, then they are actually over the streets. It's on the side where the garages are.
No.
It's plain.
The master bedrooms face to the front door. Over the courtyards, the secondary bedrooms face over the garages to the streets.
Well, if anybody can show me how you can get a balcony on there and not go over the property line, well, you would, the balcony would then extend right to the very property line of the public streets.
No.
If it's going to be seven and a half feet deep.
No. The garages are at the streets.
I understand.
The balconies are on the opposite side.
Yes, that's the side that I've talked about. And that's what you show on your elevations.
Okay.
But you do not show balconies or any kind of private space on, you might say, the front doors of the units.
And you guys might, let me jump in here. You guys might honestly be referencing two separate drawings. You do realize when we submit this, these are early, rough, preliminary site plans and interior floor plans. Capstone has obviously refined maybe these products over, you know, the last 6 months or so. So, you know, I think what might be happening here is you're looking at something that was submitted however long ago, and these drawings, again, what you're looking at there is more of a preliminary for engineering purposes, so we know, you know, where the footprint's going, where our setbacks are, how things need to be graded, how things need to drain, and, you know, it sounds like Capstone has refined some of the interiors, maybe, of some of these, so I just want to prevent any confusion, you guys might be looking at two separate drawings.
Yeah, okay, but what my point is that there is zero private yard with these units. The way it's depicted here, there's none.
Okay.
There's not a yard to put a dog or a cat into. There's not a yard that's fenced in or enclosed at all where you could put a child. And yet, you're basically doing, three-bedroom units. Three-bedroom units are going to have kids.
Well,
not all of them, of course, but I believe it's fair to say that the end units, I guess it is, are three bedrooms. So that concerns me very much. I just can't imagine how people would live in a project that had no private yard at all, with our love of dogs and kids.
Yeah, but with all due respect, if you're having children and pets, this isn't the house for you. There's plenty
or
of
pets,
great projects around.
Okay.
Yeah, there's plenty of great projects around Carson City. We've done many of them. You're honestly looking for something that's not this. But Capstone has a great track record. They've done similar type products other places. I know they've done their market research, and they're pretty confident that what they're proposing here is going to find an end user. It sounds like that end user isn't
you. Sounds like
it sounds like it's not you. And that's fine.
And animals.
And that's fine. But I know there's plenty of first-time homebuyers, millennials, that don't want pets and don't want kids, and they sure want a house.
Yeah. What happens, though, when a young couple moves in there and they have kids and there's no yard for the kids?
They're not moving in here. If that's a problem, again, this is you're talking about buyers' opinions, and all due respect, I can't tell what the potential buyers are going to think down the road. Obviously, maybe not in the preliminary interior floor plans, a balcony is included, but obviously the renderings have been updated and we can provide those. There is going to be a balcony, so there will be private space to answer your question. And, you know, whether or not the merits of the project are based on whether or not someone wants a cat or a dog or chooses to have children after they've purchased the home, I don't know that that is quite relevant, to be honest with you.
I have another question, if I may. All of the units have the garages that face out onto the what are called public streets. There's no front doors along that side at all. And why are they public? Why not use them as they really are? It's an alley. An alley with garages on each side of it.
Well,
that's really what they are.
They actually do meet the public street standard. And they do provide sidewalk connectivity. There was a desire from Carson City and from the applicant to provide connectivity to surrounding areas. Right now, there's kind of a dead-end knuckle there in the northwest corner that you can't get anywhere from the neighborhood. So if you wanted to get to, for example, Little Lane from the houses on the north, if this project's built, you couldn't get there, you know. So going with public streets, you know, provides connectivity, which is, again, policies in the master plan and kind of goals of code. You know, and again, it's the street standard is wider than some of the other ones we brought forward with PUDs. Those are the reasons behind it.
It's slightly wider than a normal alley, that's true.
No, it's slightly normal than single-family subdivision roads that have been approved in the past.
Chair, I have a question for staff, if I could, about the variance. Okay. So, staff, I understand that we are considering a variance for the minimum parcel size and dimensions for single-family attached residence, And am I right in understanding that there are not, so we're considering a variance because there are not, there's no minimum parcel size for single family attached in multifamily apartment zoning. Is that right? I think Commissioner Green asked this earlier, and I'm, oh, okay. It was asked. But no, so my follow-up is, so are there standards for minimum parcel size and dimensions for single family attached residents that are allowed in another zoning type? If so, how are these, or are these not comparable to what else, to what is allowed in another zoning type? Does that make sense? Okay. Okay.
Okay.
If I understand your question correctly, no, they're not standards in other residential zoning districts that would allow this building envelope type of parcel without some sort of planned unit development or other variants. And what was referenced earlier, and I think it's not in the residential district because there is the planned unit development is an option. Other common open space development like this is an option. In the commercial, the non-residential zoning districts, we have addressed this so that a variance isn't required. We would treat the whole site the same, recognizing that and allowing for a parcel to be just an individual unit, commercial unit, or individual building.
I think that answers my question, so thank you. This is a pretty meaty one. This is a lot to take in.
And actually, if you don't mind, I can jump in and add. There is, in code, multifamily. The base densities of 29 and 36 actually come from, they're not just random numbers. There's actually square footage requirements in there, and they are in line directly with this. So the minimum is 1,200 feet. So, for example, if we were to do multifamily apartments, that 29 to 36 number is actually based on kind of a square footage per unit in there. So realistically, the lots, or the unit itself would be consistent because that minimum is 1,200 and our units are actually bigger than that. So does that make sense?
And I want to correct something on that, because if it's actually 1,500 square feet per unit, if it's two bedrooms or more, which these are. So that's in the density. So it's not just the standard. So that's where we're saying this meets the density requirement. These projects are required to have at least 1,500 square feet per two-bedroom plus unit, and they have over 3,000 square feet per unit.
Yeah. That answers my question. Okay. Thank you very much.
And that's what I was trying to get at before. Yeah. Okay.
And those numbers are directly from the table of permitted density and where the parcel size is.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, if I can just add, on page 7 of the staff report is the language we referenced regarding the non-residential provisions for creating building envelopes, and it's in italics sort of in the middle of the page, of page 7. And it basically says when you look at your minimum area, you're including all the common areas, parking, landscaping, and building areas, and the minimum width and depth are waived. So that's
right.
if you're kind of wondering that's kind of the language that encapsulates it.
Okay. Any more questions for the applicant or staff? Okay. At this time, Mr. Owen.
Having lived in this town a few years, I know that parcel originally had requirements to give part of that parcel to the neighboring houses that were on Ruth, and those that back up to that 30-foot easement that you're talking about, is that no longer out there?
You know, honestly, I don't know, and I think we're talking about two separate properties. The way there was some public comment provided that was in the staff report, and it was actually in reference to the property adjacent to this, which is now the Tanglewood Apartments, which was developed in 1978.
No, this was for phase two of the Tanglewood.
My brother-in-law lived on
Ruth, and part of the agreement to construct anything on that second phase was to deed part of the property back to the property owners on that north. So, and that, yeah. And I know, it's not like I care one way or the other. I just don't know if that's still in play.
No, not to my knowledge. We did an Alton here, you know, which figures out where utilities, you know, property lines, everything. No, that is not included in the title report. So therefore, you know, it didn't make it to the current owners of the property or the prospective buyers of the properties.
Okay, and one last question is concerning that club you brought with you that you keep using about this could be something I consider that a club. Why then are we doing this instead of that?
Honestly, in my opinion, this is a better project, you know. Again, club, that I get it. I understand, you know, but when we're talking about variances, we also have to look at the opposite side of the coin, and what could be there without a variance is the only reason I bring that up.
Okay.
So why is this product going here? Honestly, market analysis by Capstone Communities, they've had tremendous success with this in other communities, very similar communities to Carson. They've had success with this in Reno. There's honestly a need for attached housing, in my opinion, because it lowers the price point. It gives people the pride of ownership, where realistically in Carson, it's tough to get right now. You're getting priced out on a lot of stuff, and if you know the entry homeowner, this allows them to get, you know, the pride of ownership for a price that's attainable, you know, versus having to go to an SF6 home in, say, Shoals Ranch and pay probably almost twice.
That your FAR ratio is what creates the value to the property, but considering that, are you, this design says 7-foot driveway, that's not even a driveway, is it? Can you park a car on that?
No, and the intent is not ever to park a car. The only reason it's 7.5 feet is actually to provide for construction purposes, for utilities and other things, so okay. The roadways themselves don't need to be torn up. You know, honestly, we could have requested, you know, zero, but functionally it doesn't make sense.
Right.
You know, in this situation, there's plenty of parking without the driveway. So a lot of times, 20 foot is just kind of a known requirement because that would accommodate a car.
Right.
And again, when you're looking at the multifamily standards, that setback would be measured from the boundaries, the external boundaries, and if you wanted to go apples to apples, I mean, we're at 40, 50, 60 feet to garage. But because we're providing individual parcels and a public street network through there, that's the reason for the variance.
So then it's expected that the public pulls into their garage, closes it, and gets in the house.
And they walk right up
from
into their house.
Right.
And guests would utilize the 74 guest stalls. And right. Then, as you see, there's a private. There's a public sidewalk network through there, but there's also a private sidewalk network that'll, you know, access landscaping, access, you know, project features, you know, play areas, things like that. And then it would also access, you know, front doors. So if you're coming to visit me and I have a house in here, you're using a guest spot. You're parking your car. You're getting on a 4-foot privately maintained sidewalk, walking to my front door. You're not going through my garage. And again, what that does with this alley load product is it provides that external streetscape. You know, you get a nicer exterior property boundary. You're not looking at a sea of garages. So, sure. Hopefully I answered your question.
Just a couple things. You're mentioning starter home also. Will there be a homeowners association or something? Who's going to maintain the areas that are grassed, et cetera? Because that's for maybe a senior couple whose family's gone. This might be ideal, too. Low overhead, whatever. And is there anything going to limit someone from buying one of these or several of them, putting them in a rental pool?
To answer your first question, yes, everything will be installed by the developer and maintained by a homeowners association. So everything there, the trick with these is to be as low maintenance as possible for the future buyers. As far as a provision to kind of keep investment property type folks away. That could be ultimately worked into the CC&Rs. I don't know how yeah, there will be CC&Rs that govern this, you know, as part of the HOA. And that's going to be kind of a legal question down the road. So at this point, I don't think that's been problematic in their other communities, but it could be addressed in the future, yes.
Okay, any other questions for staff or the applicant?
Let's see.
I'm going to open it up to the public. You can wait, hold your question until later. All right, at this time, I'd like to open this discussion up to the public, and to do that, I would ask that you sort of form a line or you know, as one person is finishing up, another person is approaching the podium, and that person can fill out the form, and while that person is while the first person is filling out the form, the next person can address us. Just to, and 3 minutes. I'd like you to limit your discussion to 3 minutes per person, and that if you have something that is identical to another person, it would be helpful if you just said, I would like to reiterate, or I agree with some other person, just to limit the amount of time that we're going to all be spending here, because I think we're going to be here for a while. So at this point, I would open this to the public, and please step forward, state your name, sign in, and let us hear your comments.
Hi, my name is David Potts. I live off of 711 Parkland Avenue, where the street ends, where they're going to be doing the new subdivision. As there's a few of us that have young kids that are new homeowners. One, I wonder if they're going to change the school district if they build these homes. For my daughter goes to not Fremont. The Fremont's not in our district. Bordwick Bray. I was wondering if that's going to change the school district there, and if there's going to be more traffic, since I'm the last house on the end. My house butts up to the field on the side street there. So I was just wondering if that's going to put more traffic through for the rest of the neighborhood, because we do have young children that play out on the street and stuff.
Okay. Well, the school district is not an issue that we really have any jurisdiction over.
Okay.
And it probably one development is not going to change the boundaries of a school district. more than likely.
Okay.
In terms of the Parkland Avenue access, if it is approved using as a secondary exit, it will definitely put vehicles onto your street, but again, it is a public street.
Yes.
I think it looks like it's always been planned to be a connection through there.
All right. So it is going to go to Little Lane and then.
Right. Okay. One entrance will be on Little Lane, and another one will exit onto Parkland.
Okay. I think that's all I have right now.
Okay. Are you for or against the project?
Against.
Next, please. And maybe we could take the sign-in sheet and put it over on the table there, so that I just have to remember to.
I'm vertically challenged. I have to move your microphone. My name is Suzanne Fox. I do not live in the area, but I own two mobile homes. This is what you call the single-family homes. They are because they're on real property. Nice, quiet neighborhood, but that lot off Little Lane is an eyesore. I live on my properties are on South Little Lane. It's really an eyesore, and I do support development, but I have a couple of questions that I think are very important, so I'll cut to the chase here. These are intended to be purchased and to be owner-occupied. What is to prevent somebody from buying one or more units and renting them out? Do the CCNRs prevent that?
Address the board, please.
To whoever would care to answer that question.
Well, we'll
okay. All righty. That was a very important question. And another thing is, how many people who live in a unit as small as that, with a garage, puts all their extra stuff in the garage, so there's no room for cars, so they park on the street. So a lot of people that I know do that. And I think if you have a family in there, they're going to have a lot of stuff that they can't bear to get rid of. They'll have no place to park their car since they can't park on their driveways and they can't park on the street. What are they going to do? Those are my most important questions. And the CCNRs, those usually only last for about 20 years. After that 20-year period or whenever they expire, then is it all going to go down the tubes and become just another trashy development? I know you can't predict that, but that is a definite possibility. And that's pretty much all I have, except that when they cut through parkland and cut parkland all the way through, what kind of traffic controls are there going to be? What's the speed limit going to be? And will there be stop signs, traffic lights? How are they going to control the traffic? Those are basically my questions. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you.
My name's Monica Frank. I'm a little nervous. I grew up at 711 Cottonwood Drive. I helped my mother submit this letter that nobody even mentioned. I know it was on a website, Ella Davis. I'm her daughter. And I live out in Washoe Valley, and I worked for 8 years trying to keep the city of Reno from annexing Washoe Valley. And we kept them from annexing. And I backed BLM. They had land that they were going to develop that, you know, was part of an exchange with BLM and sheep herders and things. But anyway, I just want to say the developer's representative, not one person from the developer went to any of those neighbors, and not one person, like he said, this is what Carson City wants, this is what the neighborhood wants. Not one person has come forward and said, we want a through street so people can cut through Little Lane to Fifth Street and ruin our quiet neighborhood. My mother bought the third house in that development, and we were raised there. And nobody even puts up there the families that are going to be affected. All these people are going to get the view. The people that have lived there for 51 years, nobody even came to them. Planning is always for the developers and for the city for tax revenue. And this is just disgusting. It is not consistent with Tanglewood. It's not consistent with the residents. Nobody ever brought up these single family that run all the way from Solomon to Rook Street. Okay, when we pull out, we go to Rook Street or we go to Solomon to get to Little Lane. You don't need to put another street to cut through this neighborhood. For 50 years, it was two streets. And then when they put in Tanglewood, they gave everybody, it affected three homes. In 1978, it affected three homes. It affected the home across from us, 711 Cottonwood, the home on Country Club, and the home across, okay? Nobody else. They gave all of those people 10 foot. They put single story. These were going to be condos. Nobody could sell them after 2 years, one condo sold. And they're all apartments now. They put all single level apartments along the residences and even where there aren't residences. And so we submitted three alternatives, nobody even brings it up, to remove 24 units along the property lines. Just take those out, you know, or make them all one story and make them double a single level with a garage and a single level and cut the units in half. You are developing Carson City like there is no tomorrow. You've got four big developments going on that's going to put like 3,000 or 5,000 houses in. These are, you talk about 144 residents. You're talking about potentially 288 cars coming out of there and wanting to go to Fifth Street instead of Little Lane. You know, I mean, it's just the density. You have, nobody has ever, nobody is even considering the houses that have been there, the people that have been paying their property taxes for 50 years, so a developer like the Andersons can get their homestead here and move to Colorado, take everything they're going to make here and build their mansions in another state. And you guys are going to get the property taxes from all of this, but it doesn't help anyone. It doesn't help our quality of life. And we don't want Carson City to be 100,000 people. I think we have more potential in keeping it less density and increasing our values that way, like Douglas County with their moratorium on housing and things like that. But, you know, in 100 years, there's still going to be generations here, and there's not going to be anything but a bunch of old, old apartments, 100 years old, and they can't go anywhere. So thank you. I'm sorry.
Anyone else wish to comment?
My name is Charlie Muller. I live on Cedar Street. Been there since 1968. I bought my house, it was 1,000 square feet. It's now 1,800 square feet. And I didn't have to go up to the second story. And with the second story, that close, proposed that close, that sure going to ruin the view of everybody along that strip of land. I understand people have property. I understand they want to sell it there or do develop it at least and make money. And I understand it. I get that. But I don't think it should be at the expense of the homeowners that have been there for 50 years. That just doesn't make sense. And I don't think it's right. And you know, now I have a nice view of Job's Peak and the mountains to the south. That's gone. You start putting two-story privacy in my backyard. It's gone. So I don't see why the folks on that are affected need to be the victims of this. They need to be considered. You know, the suggestion was, put one-story buildings along that property line. So I would like you to take consideration of that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Hello, I'm Mike Snyder. I live right north of that center tree up there. And I, too, have beautiful views of Job. It's a million-dollar view back there. And that open field, I understand some folks don't like it. But I knew it was going to come. That day was going to come. But I bought my place 12 years ago. And just I put a bunch of money into it. And I think a lot of it, and like I say, the view is $1 billion. But the thing is, one of the reasons why, you know, as I met my neighbors and stuff, I got a document, and this guy referred to it, I believe. It was going to be 30 foot to single, it was going to be phase two of Tanglewood. It was going to be 30 foot to single stories, and then 150 foot to the two stories. I thought, well, that would be, you know, that wouldn't be so bad. You wouldn't have people in their balconies looking back down in my backyard. But and I'd sent that letter. It was an agreement from. But anyway, I oppose it. What they've got planned, it looked like a nice development. I don't know how you get a fire truck back in the center of that complex, but. Another thing, on the north line, there's no mention of, our power is overhead. And There's also a storm sewer that runs north of this project, and this easement isn't even mentioned on the layout. And with that storm sewer and getting bucket trucks back there for the overhead power, you know, they've got trees and sidewalks there. Well, they're going to get the bucket trucks, and, you know, that's going to have to be considered also. But that's all I have to say, and thank you for your time and the consideration on this.
Thank you. Please sign.
My name is Terry Zimmerman. I also live on Cedar Street, and my yard backs up against the little lane. My questions are just with the parking, worried about these turning into rentals. No driveways, little streets. Yes, no parking. That's the goal, but until your garage fills up and then they all turn into rentals. So, it just seems like a very odd project to me, and it seemed like they're just trying to cram as many units into this as they possibly can. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm John Drown. I own a house on Cedar Street, and as I understand it, Parkland is not going to be completed through to Little Lane with this development.
Mr. Chair, would you like us to answer questions at the end?
We'll wait till the end.
Oh, okay. So, and I think that's a problem that forces everybody out through Parkland through to Fifth Street that's coming that direction. And I don't believe that, that these are, eventually they're for a one first time owners and such, but they're not going to end up that way. There's a development over Fifth Street townhouses, and I've got pictures of that I took of what they look like. They've got signs everywhere that say no parking and fire lane and everything else. And I've got a whole bunch of pictures. I'll give them to you, but this is what it looks like every day at 5 o'clock. There's people parked everywhere, and they feel it's their right, and I can understand that. I mean, if you don't have anywhere to park in front of your house or in front of your garage or anything else, I think that's a problem. I do believe that developing this is not a bad idea. It's become an eyesore and everything else. I just think that it could be developed in a way that, I don't even care if they put apartments in there. At least someone would be there to be responsible for them. And that's what it was supposed to be. I mean, by trying to make them in such small houses and with no outside private areas, I mean, a three-bedroom house, you can't even reasonably say that people are not going to have kids and pets in a three-bedroom house. I mean, people don't buy three-bedroom houses that don't have kids and pets, and those are my concerns. And
here's some pictures.
Give one to staff.
And these are pictures of what the Fifth Street townhouses look like now. And there's, I know people that own those in there, and almost no one that lives there or that owns those lives there. They rent them all out, and they're all rented out, and I understand that those people, you know, want to park in front of their garages, and those are my concerns. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, anyone else?
My name is Susan Palmer, and my brother and I were raised on Cedar Street. We've been in that area since 1970. And, you know, we're concerned about losing our privacy, and we're concerned about the effects it's going to have on our property value. We currently, between the two of us, well, actually, my brother has two houses on Cedar Street, and the one house butts up directly to this area. And, you know, with the lack of privacy and You know, we also lived in this area when the Tanglewood project was being developed and the second phase was being discussed. And I don't know if anybody else already said it or not, but Tanglewood originally started out to be the same type of proposal, where it was going to be individual townhomes or condos, whatever you want to call them, for sale. And they couldn't sell them. So they ended up turning them into apartments, and therefore the original, you know, things don't always go as originally planned. But, you know, I would like to request, you know, we understand the need for development, but the main thing for us is the lack of privacy that we're going to incur if this goes forward. So we are against the prospect of this.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to address this item?
Hi, my name's Rick Lee. I also live on Cedar Street. I grew up in the neighborhood. Most of my concerns have already been voiced by the people that have come up, and I just want to, I would echo those, and I fully support everything that everyone else has came up here and stated. Also, you know, they said there's going to be CC&Rs to keep track of and enforce the upkeep of the properties that are going to be developed, and you know, I don't know. I don't feel real comfortable with that. I don't know who's going to enforce it, or 10, 15, 20 years from now, you know, is that still going to be in effect? You know, we're worried about our long-term property value. And also, I know it was mentioned, but also, you know, there's our views and our privacies. And 30 feet is not that far to have a two-story building that has a balcony looking into your backyard. So I'm, you know, that's one of my concerns from a privacy standpoint as well as a property value standpoint. So anyways, thanks for your time.
Thank you. Is there anyone else wishes to address this item?
Hello, my name is Keith Work. I do live in Carson City, but not in the neighborhood affected by this. Have been a resident for over 20 years. A couple of observations. It seems to me that the allowed public parking, that is the 74 public spaces available, very inadequate. When I and my spouse, perhaps I have a roommate, who knows, move in here, each of us drives a car, somebody has a motorcycle. There are a few people in the area who have motorcycles in addition to their cars. Is the garage big enough to accommodate both cars? Of course, at least one of them is a sizable SUV, based on what I see on the streets around town. And is there room enough in there to safely fit your motorcycle, or do the residents start needing to park cars out in these currently planned 74 public spaces? I personally would think you need more publicly accessible parking spaces, because there's obviously not parking allowed curbside on the streets. Secondly, one of the other illustrations that was up earlier that showed the rendering of the front and rear of the units. The fourth bullet point on that makes reference to alley. Not street, not road, it makes reference to alley. What's that in reference to, since we've specifically been told, no, these aren't alleys, they're public streets? The comments you've had from people talking about two-story buildings butting up to their existing neighborhoods invading privacy. Yeah, if you made all of the perimeter units single-story, easy way to overcome that, because suddenly you don't have any second-story balconies, which I realize takes away a possible selling point. That's it. Just observations. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else? Okay. And I will bring it back. And I think what we'll do is we will have the applicant address what he heard as your concerns and the concerns that related to utilities or parking requirements and those kinds of things. We'll have staff address those. So at this point, Mr. Baker, if you would address.
Chris Baker, Manhart Consulting, for the record. I did jot down a few of these. I'll just kind of run through them. The initial comment about school district, obviously I don't think I'm the one qualified to answer that. Traffic, though, I can address that. There was a traffic study submitted with this. I would like to point out, it seems like there's a lot of issue with the extension of Parkland. So if you had reviewed the conditions and the modified memo that Danny and Hope had provided, what you see there is actually what's going to be required of the development of this project. And that won't actually be required to be constructed until the 74th unit. So what you're looking at until then is really access onto Little Lane. There will be secondary fire access. There's a requirement for that to get out to Parkland, but it's just that. It's secondary fire access. And that is at actually the 31st unit. So secondary fire access at the 31st unit. The Parkland improvement is not required to be there until later in the development. The traffic study actually indicates that only 15% of the complete build-out would actually utilize the Parkland to 5th Street as kind of their primary access. You know, Little Lane is the main entry, and that's really where people are going to, for the majority of the project, the way the traffic study reads is that's, you know, going to be 85% of the use. CCNRs was brought up in fear of rental properties. So, again, the CCNRs were not required to be submitted with this. But what has happened in the past, talking it over with Mike Branson from Capstone, they have required that the properties need to be owner-occupied for the first 12 months as part of the CCNR. So that would prevent people from buying bulk properties and renting them out as units. So I think that would, you know, be the best way to address that issue. Like anything, after 12 months, I mean, you can't really predict the future, so that's kind of where we'd be going. There is overflow parking, I hear. Again, I mean, we're meeting the parking requirement for the use, two spaces for private garages for 2 and 3 bedroom units, and in addition, the 74 stalls. I mean, we're at 2.5 spaces per unit. Put that in context with the apartments that were just here before you. We got a whole space extra. and in my experience, 2 and 3 bedroom owner-occupied units do not house as many people as 2 and 3 bedroom for lease units, nor as many vehicles. So, in my opinion, you know, we're parked right where we need to be, and we're parked in compliance with code.
Yeah, wait till he finishes.
Jumping back down, views. I get it. I mean, I'm a homeowner, and, you know, if someone was building something, you know, adjacent to me, you know, if, especially if I've lived there for 50 years. I mean, I get that. You know, and we can do what, you know, anything to the best of our ability and obviously within reason to kind of help with some screening and other things. You know, but the fact of the matter is we're proposing nothing, you know, as far as an extreme height. I mean, a 28.5-foot building is, I mean, there's one-story units that are 28 feet, pretty easy. I know mine's 27, and it's a one-story. Not to mention, you know, not requesting that additional variance, you know, that you do have the 30 feet there, and if we bolstered up with maybe a little bit additional landscaping to protect those, I think there's six homes that do have rear yards there, you know, that would be something that we could explore. You know, not to mention, I keep hearing a lot about, well, why don't we just do single family there, single family 6,000 square foot homes. You know, if that's the case, you don't have a 30-foot setback. You actually could do a 10-foot setback. And with that, you could still have a two-story home. So if you have a two-story home, I believe it would go to 20 feet. And you could have a two-story home that could be in excess of, you know, 28 feet with 10 feet less of setback. So, you know, the way we go about this is, you know, we designed a code, and I understand there's emotion involved, and there's property owners who've been here for years, and, you know, we again, if I would have had some of this information prior to this meeting or prior to even the staff report coming out, I would have loved to individually meet with these people, you know, and see if, hey, here's your home, you know, let's kind of try to figure this out. But at this meeting now, I mean, we could, you know, potentially, you know, add some additional screening, additional landscaping there to prevent kind of an intrusive nature of these units. But I think that at this point, that's kind of all we can offer up. Power and sewer was brought up. I don't know if Danny wants to touch on that. I mean, we're aware of it, and I know we have a condition to provide access through there. So with that, there'd be turf block or something that would be to the approval of engineering to make sure that we can get to those, they can get to those sewers, and they can get to, you know, the necessary utilities. There was something brought up, and honestly, forgive me, in my PowerPoint, I did say alley load, and I think anybody who's read a planning book or is in the real estate business, or probably you guys who see, you know, X amount of projects a month, that's just a common term for a rear-loaded, you know, garage. You know, obviously these are public streets. They're proposed to be public streets. They meet the street minimums as any other street would be in Carson City, you know, and actually they're wider than many of the streets. So I'll apologize for utilizing just kind of a common planning term for a rear-loaded garage. I maybe should have just used rear-loaded. I know there was some questions also about fire access. What had happened here is the turning radius templates, as I understand it, some of the curbs were going to get clipped by a fire truck. So we have accepted a condition from Carson City Fire to make sure the radius meet. We had honestly designed it with the wrong, a different truck size. So there's multiple truck sizes, and the way I understand it, we did it with one that is a little bit smaller, but the condition is there. The project is in the process of being redesigned, and actually is pretty much redesigned to just widen those returns. All of the development standards are still met. The parking's still the same. The unit count's still the same. You know, what ends up happening is you just end up, you know, sidewalks end up being shifted and things end up getting a little bit wider here and there. So I think we've got a pretty good handle on that. With that, I think that is kind of everything that was brought up. If there's okay. Something else that I didn't maybe jot down.
No, we have a couple questions here from Ms. Monroy.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I do have a question and a comment. So regarding the parking, I understand that they will be public streets and they meet the city standard or requirements for being public streets. I'm not sure what was provided by the great constituent who did their homework and due diligence and provided these pictures. So I guess what I'm wondering is, could there be parking enforcement by the city because these are public streets? Could there be code enforcement, or could that be done by public safety? I'm not sure what the standards are in the development that was provided here, if these are public streets or if these are alleys. And maybe this is a question for staff, I don't know. So could there be parking enforcement done here? My second comment, just quickly, is I would be, I understand there's concerns from the public regarding the privacy in the second story. I'd be amenable and would wonder if any of my fellow commissioners would be amenable to considering a condition regarding landscape around the perimeters to help provide increased privacy or something from neighbors that have second stories. So,
before any, could you address the
did my question make sense?
Parking enforcement.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry, we were talking on the side about your question, but yes, with the public side. So, I think the example provided, I think I know which one that is, and none of those are public streets going through and to those apartments where there's parking in front of them. So it's a private driveway. It's a private alley. It's not within the city's enforcement. But if they're to answer your question, if they're public streets, it's illegal to park on a sidewalk. It's all illegal to park in front of a driveway and block the sidewalk. And city enforcement could write a citation for that. That was your question, right?
That was my question. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Sattler.
I heard quite a bit, and on that north end, you have 12 units looking right down in all these people's backyards. And they're standing probably 12, 15 feet in the air in that balcony. Is there any way, I don't know if it would help or even be a consideration, to flip those somehow where the road would be there? They'd probably rather look at the back of a garage than have people looking down into their yard. I don't know if that would be of any consideration of an improvement or help or not, but that would probably solve the privacy issue if there was any way that last road would go on the perimeter, especially for those 12 units that are sitting up there with the balconies looking right down in all their backyards. I don't know if there's any just a thought, not just something to throw out.
Okay, Mr. Solano.
I'd like to ask staff a question. I believe there's a requirement of 100 square feet of private yard required for each unit. Am I right on that or not?
I'll address that just with a little more experience with the code. No, it's not required to have 100 square feet of private open space for a multifamily project. It's 150 feet of common area plus 100 square feet of private or common per apartment.
Okay.
So apartments like the prior apartments on this application, the existing, as you said, the existing ones don't have private. So, but that's okay. That can meet it. What you can meet the open space requirement with all common open space.
Okay. Thank you. I would like to.
Wait a minute. Ms. Green.
Go ahead.
I don't know if we can do this, so I'm just asking. Is there any way this can be tabled and maybe the developer meet with residents? And I would like to see some of the final approaches, like the floor plans and stuff, because I know we don't have the final ones and you said they've already changed. Is that a possibility? I'm just asking. I don't know if it is.
Do you want to address that, Lee?
Well, I would need to take some time to look at the code. I mean, there may be some time frames in which we need to take action, which may still allow you to bump it a month. We could certainly, that would be a question for the applicant if they were willing to do that as well as another option. So I'll kind of explore that on the side here and dig into the code a little bit to answer that.
Okay. Mr. Solano.
Yeah, the open spaces that we see on the plan between the sidewalks, I'm looking at the one that's close with you, it's the most northerly. And the size of that is 60 by 110. Oh, I'm sorry.
It's 60 by 110, but that's actually a catch basin for stormwater. And it is recessed down in such a way where there's a drain in the very center of it, and it's sloping along the sides so that the flat area in the, one of the largest open spaces is really 20 by 60. That's what we're talking about in open space. Now, yeah, true, you can plant on the slopes, I'm sure, that lead down to it. But we have to, you know, understand, you know, what the open space is on this project, because as I mentioned earlier, there is zero private space per unit, zero, unless they change the plan and provide balconies. It doesn't include balconies now, except in the pretty elevation. It's just a rendering that shows a balcony that doesn't exist on the floor plans. I'm very concerned. I think that this project needs to go back to design and has to be redone. I think that there are many, many questions that have been brought up. The northerly part of it that looks down on the two-story or looks up at two-story units, you know, right across from them. I think that there needs to be a street on that side. Perhaps there needs to, they need to be on that side one-story units. And you, people can't live this day and age in a project that doesn't have a little bit of yard. You know, you've got to have at least a patio that you can let the dog out onto. Or the kid, if you're going to have three-bedroom units, what's the purpose of having a three-bedroom unit if you're not going to have any kids there? It's pretty rare. It happens, of course. The other thing is that the street system, as it is, as I mentioned earlier, would be patrolled, maintained, rebuilt, you know, as necessary. Those streets would, of course, contain the garbage cans that go out, you know, once a week, because that's what's required. It seems to me that it makes more sense for those to be alleys and or undedicated streets. So take the burden off the city. The city is going to have to maintain these, and every 10 years are going to have to be repaved and whatever else you have to do to it. The Sheriff's Department, and I'm involved as a volunteer with the Sheriff's Department, so I know a little bit about parking and where people park where they're not supposed to. They're going to have to constantly patrol this area if it's a dedicated street. If it's not a dedicated street, the Sheriff's Department doesn't get involved with it. Mr. Plimmel explained exactly what the situation is with the Sheriff's Department. Deliveries. What happens when the launder or the pizza man or whoever it is who wants to visit the project, he has to park in one of the parking slots and then walk, you know, maybe 100 feet. Maybe he doesn't even know exactly which unit he's going to. Where will the addresses be? He can't even, I guess the addresses will be on the garages because that's the only place you could put the addresses so people who are visiting would know which unit was theirs so they could park somewhere and finally walk around to the other side that looks out onto this little patio, or this little open area, I should say. I think there are so many problems with it that I think it needs to go back to design.
Ms. Monroy.
Okay. I guess I want to throw this out for consideration by the commission. While the presenter, the applicant, might have It might have felt like a club regarding what this could have been. It could have been approximately 300 units. I'm much more comfortable with 147 units. Where it's at today, I do share some of the concerns regarding parking and the design and the layout, but I'd be really curious to hear, and frankly, that the fact that there's maybe support for the development of this lot, but maybe not this development. I think it would be great to go back to public and, or have the developer, the applicant, go back to the community. However, the applicant could just pull this and say, we're just going to put in 300 apartments, and then we've probably got an even bigger situation. So I'd be curious to hear what the timeline is and what the applicant can do. I do share the concerns. However, regardless of if it was a club or not, this is what it could have been, and I'm much more comfortable with this as opposed to 300 units. Thank you.
Mr. Sadler.
Just going back to what I mentioned earlier, if someone... That north side, you've got 30 feet you're given to the property line. And I wouldn't want a big net put up there so that you can't look down into my yard either or anything else. And again, as I mentioned, you kind of shook your head, whatever. There's some things I think need to be done. It's just not 30 feet's like from me to that chair. And you're out trying to barbecue, or your kids are playing in the backyard or in the pool or whatever. I got a lot of heartburn with that north end of this property. Other than that, I don't have a lot because it doesn't affect people. It affects an apartment complex, a vacant field, and a street. But regardless whether they've lived there 2 years or 10 years or 50 years, to suddenly have something come in that, if there were a flat surface, if people aren't looking out windows down into my yard, I may not have a problem looking at the back of a building or a garage or a bedroom window. But to have a patio or a deck looking over that's not in the plans but looking over into my yard, I'd have a lot of problems with. So it's just my comment.
I have a question for staff. In the Cedar Street neighborhood, what's the maximum height allowed in that zoning district?
I think it's 28 feet, and I got several code sections open here, so I have, it's 26 or 28 feet. Let me look that one up and get back to you.
Okay.
Oh, I can answer the other question now, since I got now the mic's open. So with regards to timing, the Planning Commission must make a recommendation, must take action on it within 60 days of the acceptance of a complete application, which was already about 45 days ago. So without the applicant's consent, you need to make a decision tonight. The applicant could request a continuance, and you could grant that.
So regardless of whether it's 28 feet or 26 feet, it still would allow a two-story structure.
It allows two-story structures, yes. Right. It's a height that allows two-story structures.
So just as an observation, somebody who lives on Cedar Street could put an addition on a house or tear the house down and put up a two-story house. That happens. It happened in my neighborhood. It's just the fact of life. It's happened all over Carson City. So. In terms of your privacy, I understand that completely, but just so we are talking about reality here, there's no guarantee of privacy even if this project doesn't go forward, because your neighbor could intrude on your privacy.
Could we consider, Chair, a condition regarding landscaping to help that, or
yes,
along that line? Could
we,
that be
we could. I mean,
okay.
That would be a potential.
Okay, thank you.
At this point, though, I would like to ask the applicant if they would be agreeable to a continuance so that they could address some of the issues and come back with a proposal that...
I think before addressing that question, Chair, I think I would want to request a recess to confer with the actual applicant But I think I'd like to touch on the privacy on the north side. Commissioner Sadler had stated maybe flipping and putting a road over there. If you do that, you end up with no landscaping because you end up with a road. And if you look at the elevations, yes, there's a balcony in the front with one window and then some lower allowing windows. There's just as many windows above the garage. So, you know, I think realistically keeping it the way it is and beefing up landscaping to help with those, I think we're talking about 6 or 7 rear yards, it would probably be a better approach. Because I'm pretty sure everyone would rather look out at, you know, some evergreen trees and landscaping as a buffer as opposed to, you know, a stucco wall that's 30 feet off. So that's just an observation. Again, if the chair wishes, I could ask for a quick recess and confer, if that's okay.
Okay. We will recess for 5 minutes.
I just wanted to answer a couple more questions just real quickly before we go, if that's all right.
Yes.
Okay. Regarding the sewer on the north side, there's also a parcel map in for some of this, and historically this is there's a sewer line there with no easement width, so right now we would have to go out and talk about how wide it is, but a 20-foot easement is a typical easement. And we've made that request of them for the sewer easement and access, and they've agreed to that. Parkland, for this project, will be constructed as shown there with a relocatable easement to connect to Little. Patrick Pittenger's in the audience later if we want to talk about connectivity issues, but with it planned going to the south, at some point it will connect. And then traffic control would meet pertinent standards with appropriate stop signs.
Okay. Thank you. One question.
Just a quick, would the landscaping affect that sewer thing or whatever? That's the, you know, would that be a problem if they're trying to put larger trees in there or something? Or is there room?
So typically we want 5 to 10 feet. With 30 feet, it might be more applicable to keep those up against the buildings instead of up against the other side.
So they come back more. They come back more towards the project rather than going more towards the fence.
Correct.
Okay, which would probably they could then. Okay.
Okay, we'll take a 5-minute recess, and we will come back and address this issue. We'll call the meeting back to order. It's 7:46. So, Mr. Baker.
Again, Chris Baker, Banhart Consulting, for the record. After discussing with the applicant, we are okay with tabling the item. We would like to just get a few other things on the record. There was a couple comments from the commission that we'd like to address, too. And then as long as, could we get this on next month's agenda? If we can get this on next month's agenda, and we would be more than happy to meet with the residents. You know, the way we honestly see this, and I think most of the commission sees it the same way, is that the interface on that north boundary is the real issue here. And whether it's landscaping or whether it's, you know, trying to rework some stuff to maybe provide additional, you know, linear feet of separation, you know, whatever that ends up being, we're going to do our best to try and make that right. With that, there was some other comments that were brought up, you know, that were really addressing kind of the functional use of the property and how things work and things like deliveries and, you know, slopes of common area and things like that were brought up. And I would just like to address a couple of those. Simple point, there will be addresses on both the front and the rear of the homes. And as far as usable, quote unquote, usable open space, again, we're twice as much as is required. And yes, there are depressions in the interior common areas. If anyone's been to the site, it's dead flat. You have to get water out of there somewhere. The depressions are, I believe, 4 or 5 to 1s around the perimeter of those, which any lawnmower will go right over, no problem. Those are actually probably flatter than most of people's front yards, including my front yard. So as far as the usability of those, I don't see that as being a problem. I actually see that as probably being the best thing a five-year-old's ever experienced. You know, rolling down a hill, a little bit of a slope is probably a great thing. And that brings up another point. Maybe this model is different. Obviously it is, because it doesn't fit into the box of Carson Code. That's the positive of this. These row houses work everywhere else in the country. They work numerous cities that Capstone's already built this exact model in, and this is what their clientele is craving. Maybe it's not for everybody, but that's not for us to judge. The point is this is supposed to be a community. I'm sure people who are, you know, of a certain age group, remember playing stickball in the street with all their friends. No one played in the rear yards. You know, we've become a society that is isolated. This community breaks that isolation. The point of those common areas is for you to actually interact with your neighbors, heaven forbid. So just because it's different doesn't mean it's wrong. So I think, you know, with that, we're fine with the continuance. We will absolutely work with the neighbors on that north boundary. But, you know, this is not the last of these that you're going to see. And, you know, if you want to provide housing for all, you're going to see a lot more stuff like this.
Chair, I have a question
for you. Ms. Monroy.
Can we ask that the applicant bring back completed and updated current site plans and designs? I know that it sounds like there was a lot of back and forth about the plan layouts and if there's balconies, but no, we've added them, we promise. They're totally there, we swear, on our new ones.
I think so, they got that message.
Yeah, so it would be nice if we could have ask the applicant to come back with updated current information, so we're considering all the facts when we make our decision. Thank you.
So, yes, we will actually come back with the most current. Again, the ones that were submitted were essentially just like a draft CC&R or a draft floor plan. They're required. They're actually for a product that they built elsewhere. Very similar as far as footprints go. The elevations do actually represent what would be there. We will provide the updated floor plans so you can see where the balconies are accessed, et cetera.
Thank you.
And we will provide a site plan that meets the turning radius requirements of code.
Thank you.
Okay.
And showing if you make changes to that rear property line.
Yeah, I think what we would probably do is have some sort of cross-section just of that area. I don't think we'd probably end up redoing a whole landscape plan. I think what we would do is maybe have a cross-section, you know, that shows, you know, what we're looking at from a street view.
Okay.
We should maintain these.
Yeah, I would
we'll
hold on to
them. Maintain these as well.
Because the application in general is the
right,
same.
Question.
Yeah. Mr. Salerno.
Yeah, I wonder, this is to staff, would a zero lot line project be allowed in this zoning? Because a zero lot line, you can do that on a 25-foot wide lot and have an 8-foot yard along the side with a blank wall on the zero side. And we did that in San Diego. And it was a huge, huge success. Can you do that? With
is that a different product? You're saying it's a little bit different product?
Yeah, it's a little different, okay. But, you know, it basically you're...
We have
approaching the same density, maybe not quite as much density, but almost, with a 25-foot wide lot, basically... That would allow you to have an 8-foot yard that's totally useful for that lot, because the zero lot line does require a blank wall, you know, on the property line. So there's privacy, and you get a great living situation in that. Something to think about if it's possible.
And I can address that now. Realistically, this buyer doesn't want a yard. They don't want to maintain it. They don't want to have to deal with it. So, I mean, yes, that could be entertained, but it wouldn't be for this site. It wouldn't be done by this builder. The point of this is not to have to mow your yard. That's the point. You know, let somebody else do it.
The zero lot line I'm talking about, you sell it. It's a product that's sold. It's not an apartment. And you can go as much as two stories, too, you know, with it. And have a garage. Have a two-car garage. It works. Believe me.
And again, all due respect, the product that we are going to propose there is going to be that product. We will work with to appease the residents on the north end, and duly so. I mean, I think that's fitting, and that's what we should do. It's the right thing to do. So whether it's landscaping or additional setbacks or flipping things or what have you, we will do everything in our power to make that happen. But as far as taking the box and redoing the puzzle pieces, that's not going to happen.
Okay. So, can I get a motion?
Since I was one who kind of brought it up, but I might need some help.
Yeah. Well, we're going to continue both the variance request and the tentative map request.
So let me provide some, just because I want you to hit a couple points for the record, just to make sure. So if it could be at the applicant's request, I move to continue the VAR number and the TSM number to the May 25th Planning Commission meeting, and with that, for the public, that this item will be continued on the agenda on Wednesday May 25th, and that meeting also begins at 5:00.
And I would ask that it be put as the first item on the agenda.
That was my thank you, Mr. Baker and Associates, for this. So at the applicant's request, I move to table VAR 16, VAR-16-024. Do I need to read it?
No.
Okay. And TSM-16-023 to Wednesday, May 25th, the next Planning Commission meeting, for discussion with the residents and
continuation of the big project, public hearing.
What's the agenda?
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
No?
No.
Okay, so we have a 5-1. Mr. Salerno opposed.
Can I make a point? Again, thank you all for who spoke. I want to make sure that everybody who wishes to be in attendance at a neighborhood meeting has the opportunity. So I know there's some sign-in sheets here that have been filled out by most of you. If you didn't fill something out, I think this is probably going to be the best way for us to be able to get a hold of you. So if you wish to attend the meeting, I can maybe have a secondary sheet here. I just want to make sure everybody who is affected will be involved. Okay?
Thank you for that. Okay. So the public hearing portion of this Planning Commission meeting is ended. And we will now move to item G, which is staff reports. Mr. Plemmel.
Okay, actually, I'll go ahead and start with our future agenda item since that question was asked for the May Planning Commission meeting. We, as you noted earlier, we have growth management on the agenda.
Please take your discussions outside.
So on the May Planning Commission meeting, we have growth management on the agenda. We also have actually a number of special use permits for medical marijuana establishments, which is really just for two locations and a third, two applicants, three locations, but one is a new ownership that's resulting in, because of the ownership, they have to get a new one, and then one is moving from one property to the other on Deer Run Road. And then we'll have this item on the agenda, and we'll schedule this item first. And the other one I should note is that in the April 21st board meeting, Silver Oak PUD amendment was approved. There was actually a lot more people that came to that meeting from the neighborhood than was here. There was a lot of discussion about traffic safety, and Patrick and Public Works is continuing to work with the neighborhood to improve safety at the park, but that was approved by the board 5-0. So I'll conclude my presentation with that.
Okay, thank you. Andy, you got anything? Run ahead.
Just you pointed out water. I'll do my typical water update. I think a couple of you haven't seen it before, maybe, or maybe we have. But anyways, it'll be updated, similar. So if you're thinking of any questions, bring them on.
Okay, thank you. Any commissioners have anything they'd like to add? I would like to indicate that I will not be here for next month's meeting. So you get it. Okay, I will entertain a motion for adjournment. Oh, public comment, I'm sorry. The public is invited to comment on or, hey, we're still in session.
I'm sorry. Oh, we're on.
The public is invited at this time to comment on and discuss any topic that is relevant to or within the authority of the Planning Commission, including any matter that is not specifically included on the agenda as an action item. Anybody wish to address? Okay. Are you?
I'm sorry.
Is this about the item we just covered?
Yes.
You'll have to wait till next
month.
Oh,
you can't. You can't add anything to it. Okay.
No, it's on. It's not on. It's a.
You know, for public comment purposes, just for clarification on the record, you know, members of the public at the chairman's discretion is able to come and speak to any matter that falls within the jurisdiction of this body. It's just that, you know, the restriction, the main restriction is that this body can't take any action with respect to any of those matters. But, so that's just for clarification purposes.
All right. But I would like, just like the applicant or this person to know that it would be more appropriate for her to address that issue at the next meeting.
And Mr. Chair, that's absolutely fine. Like I said, that's completely at the chair's discretion.
So you can make your comment, but we can't respond.
I just have an observation.
And you would be better off making it during the public hearing next month.
I just have a quick observation about the single level option that was brought up. It could appeal to an elderly base of people too that don't need to or don't want to have stairs or don't want to have a second story. So it could actually help sell some of the units as well. That was all I wanted to say.
Okay.
Could you please state your name and sign your
sign
in?
I did sign in from the first one. Do I need to sign
in
again?
Could you state
your name for the record? Leanne Sarum. Thank you.
Good evening. My name's Sean Gallagher. I'll try and make this quick. I know everybody wants to get out of here. But if you'll just bear with me for a second. I do have some questions. If I understood it correctly from sitting back there, there was a number of questions raised, and at the end of this, they will be answered, or?
There was a number of questions raised that were actually answered by him. But if you do have, so now it's continued and still in the process, certainly call the planning office.
And this has nothing to do with that project. I'm not interested in that. This is about, I would like to educate myself and understand how this all works because.
Okay.
I'll just ask the question. If you can answer, that's great. If not, whatever. You know,
well, if it's an item that isn't a policy decision, I think that we can give you an answer. But if it has to do with a specific project, then
no, it doesn't. It's just a general.
Okay.
I might comment on some specific projects that are not on the agenda.
Okay.
But my question is this: if developers, for example, Menhard. If they're in accordance with all of the development codes, can you vote no?
As long as they're
operating within the letter of the law, can you vote no? I mean, obviously, there's likely some sort of an appeal process.
Okay.
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 All right. Now I'll just move on to my comment then. I came here very upset But to your credit, I would really like to thank all of you. I'm actually somewhat refreshed because it seemed as though there were some questions, and no disrespect to the gentleman from Manhart, but it seems like you were critical of it. You know, there was some scrutiny, and I'm happy to see that that occurred. I live on Maison Way. I'm here. I would like to address this development in West Carson City that's proposed, the Vintage at Kings Canyon. That's going to be appearing in front of you guys next month, according to a newspaper article today in the Nevada Appeal. Well, once again, then that group has now been misquoted in the Nevada Appeal again. Right, and I would like to address that. I would like to let you guys know that if that's misinformation, that's been this whole project, this whole proposal. There has been no communication. There has been, I believe, some sort of attempt to communicate with the public, probably well-intentioned. I'm not trying to say they're evil, but I just want you to know that that's what's been going on in the community out there. There's been really, really terrible public relations. I'm just wondering, how the hell do you run a company like this? But I don't know. That's what's been going on. I just want you guys to be aware. That's what's getting ready to come across to you guys. You know, it's going to be a lot of, we're going to build houses with flair. They're going to be great. Well, I mean, they're not going to come up here and tell you, they're going to be kind of substandard and, they're not going to be really in keeping with the neighborhood. They're not really going to be keeping with the theme. I mean, they're going to come up here and pitch you. And I'm happy to see that you're not willing to just wear a mat, just pull the wool over your eyes and lay down and take it. So I'm asking that you please keep that up. Please do that at the next meeting as well. Mr. Chairman, I guess I know you won't be here, but the rest of you, please do that. Don't just, because Mr. whoever from Rubicon Group comes up here and says, all is well, remain calm. I assure you we've looked into this. I mean, just because they say it, so what? So please, 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 please be critical of them. I'm telling you right now, just because everybody in the neighborhood can't be here doesn't mean that they're not concerned. It's not easy for people to come to these meetings. I'm expecting a baby. My wife is, and yeah. I don't know if I'll be here at the next meeting. That's right around the due date, but I'm gonna really try. Yeah, I know. If it means anything, this might sound a little dramatic. You guys represent us. Don't let us down. Thanks.
Thank you.
And Ms. Sullivan, if you wouldn't mind, I'd like some of your time.
Anyone else wish to make comments on anything within our purview? Okay. I will entertain a motion for adjournment.
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
I will second that motion.
We have a motion and a second for adjournment. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion passes. I know that's what it's...